when you sort of feel that inside of yourself, like that little fear or doubt, I know I like to acknowledge it and say, oh, there's something there that is kind of scary. I'm going to run towards it and not away from it.
My name is Esprit Devorah, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Women in Tech Show. I'm your guest host, Ira Herman. I guest host any of these episodes where we're talking to people in the crypto and blockchain space. And we have an amazing guest in studio. Very fortunate to have her. She's done some incredible things. Say hi to everyone, Tiana.
Hi, guys.
And what is your name? What's your company and what are you working on?
My name is Tiana Lawrence and my company is Lawrence Ventures. And I'm working on blockchain technology and investing as usual. I'm building out a gaming platform using cryptocurrency and blockchain technology.
Amazing. And so I want to talk about that gaming platform in a little bit. But before we do that, when did you start Lawrence Ventures?
Lawrence Ventures, I started last year as a mechanism for doing more angel investing in tech startups, primarily blockchain, IoT, and AI.
Very cool. So the super futuristic technologies are your everyday business.
I think it becomes really powerful when you start combining security and systems that are working together intelligently. And I think that that's what our future is.
Very cool. And you know quite a bit about those spaces. In fact, I picked up your book, Blockchain for Dummies. And so that's an amazing book. I've been going through that. There's a lot of really interesting topics on it. Everything from kind of beginner standpoint all the way to setting up your own blockchain and running it yourself and generating your own wallets and how the different popular technologies work. You talk about the Bitcoin blockchain, Ethereum, Factum, all kinds of other ones. Tell us a little bit about how you know Factum and some of the other blockchains in that book.
So I was a co-founder. I still am a co-founder of Factum. And Factum was a new blockchain. It's about 4 years old now. And we were doing a different type of technology. We're using a federated network versus a public network like Bitcoin or Ethereum.
Very cool. And so, yeah, what does federated mean as opposed to what Bitcoin and Ethereum is doing?
So I like to kind of divide the blockchain world into your public, private, and maybe even hybrids of the two. And so you have a Bitcoin or Digibyte or Ethereum where you can participate at any level in that technology. You could be a developer, you could be a miner, you could just buy and trade the cryptocurrency. Or there's blockchains that have more gating in them that allow for different types of technology. And so with Factum, we had 33 federated nodes. That means that people that are utilizing the network vote on who gets to process transactions and allow them to go into the blockchain. And then there's audit nodes that double check that work. And then anybody else can also be running a node to be triple verifying that the transactions are flowing correctly. And then all of that is taken down to a single Merkle root and then anchored into other blockchains like Bitcoin, so that the system can't be rolled back. And that's about every 10 minutes how it was architected. So
very cool. And you mentioned a very technical term, Merkle root. And so my understanding of that is it's a way, what you said in the book about Factum, the goal was to build a blockchain that's scalable or that's more scalable for enterprise. Is that right?
Yes. So a Merkle root is simply like, any amount of data can be hashed, and with a hash, you can combine those until you get down to a single string of numbers that can represent almost any size of data. And it's a way of being able to prove existence or prove validity of information in a very simple way. And it's a that's think of it as anchoring, as a way of like saying this is how something was at this given point in time.
So that's amazing, because right now the major blockchains, you've got Bitcoin and Ethereum and several others, they're, as far as I know, not solving that problem of the more transactions that go in there, the bigger those blockchains are getting. And then any server of the distributed ledger, or what we call miners usually, have to then download a whole copy of the entire history of every transaction that's ever happened. And so what you're talking about is a way to summarize those transactions then, so that you can contribute without having to download that whole blockchain?
Yeah. So most blockchains are structured as a single sort of like, think of it as like a single data set that's like always growing in size over time. And Factum in a lot of ways is like that, but it's structured in such a way so it's like a blockchain of chains. So it allows users just to pull down information that they're interested in without having to pull down the full data set, which allows it to scale for commercial use. And we pioneered that for use with the Department of Homeland Security, the Gates Foundation, and large financial institutions that needed to put a lot of transactions in.
So that's fascinating. So this is a technology and company that's up and running. This blockchain, blockchains are up and running, and you've got the Department of Homeland Security, the Gates Foundation, and other enterprise level type of organizations using it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. So that's a very different kind of space from what you're working on now. So tell us what you're working on right now.
Everything I worked on at Factum was pretty serious, and I loved it. It felt like every day the work that I was doing was important to the world. And I decided with this next phase in my life, I wanted to do things that were fun. It's good to do important things, but it's also important to do fun things. And I had come across this game called CryptoKitties. I don't know if any of you guys have played that yet. If you haven't, check it out. It's kind of odd and addicting and weird. And
I may have some CryptoKitties myself.
That's fantastic. I found it because I was trying to process a transaction on Ethereum and it wasn't going through. And I was trying to dig up why Ethereum was being broken. And I found CryptoKitties, and I was kind of mad at first. I'm like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And my little sister calls me up on the phone, and I'm like on the CryptoKitty website, and I'm trying to get my cats to breed. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm breeding CryptoKitties. She's like, what's that? And my youngest sister, she's a junior developer, but she hasn't really wanted anything to do with the crypto space because her big sister does all this stuff. And her eyes just were sort of like lit up, and she wanted to play. And she calls me back the next day, and she'd bred two cats. And what I realized had happened was somebody that had had no interest in this space had become completely educated in it. In a sense, like, she had set up her own wallet. She had accepted cryptocurrency. She had gone in and used a wallet to log into a website. And then within that website, she was able to create her own rare digital assets that then she could sell in a global marketplace. And that happened in 24 hours. And as somebody that has been trying her best to like educate the world about this technology, I'm just like, I think people should just play CryptoKitties.
it explains a lot just going through the dynamics of the game.
But it's fun. It's not like I'm sitting here telling you about how to, you know, build a Merkle tree and go all the way down to a Merkle root and then anchor it inside of another blockchain and then make sure it doesn't roll back. Like, it moves away from that and moves to a place of fun and play, because I think that's how most of us learn best, is through exploration and learning and through play that engages us. So,
Definitely play is very important. There's no reason things shouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
And that's, some of the most complicated, complex concepts are easily taught if it's just thought out in a way that's fun, or there's some game dynamic to it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you then working on right now?
So inside of this game platform that we're building out, our first game is called DigiPuppies, and it combines some of the technologies you have with CryptoKitties and Pokemon Go and a little bit of Cards Against Humanity. I think it's fun to throw a little dark humor in there. And so we're just kind of building that out as an extension. Like, I think games should be easy to learn but difficult to master, as they say. So adding other aspects to games that keep people engaged and allow for other kinds of interesting opportunities for growth in global markets.
So when did you first become interested in tech personally?
Oh, man. I think the very first time I sort of became fascinated with technology, my dad's friend installed security systems. And one day he brought over a box of like spare parts, and I remember digging around in this box and finding all of these like little chips and wires and pieces, and just like taking it apart and trying to figure out how it worked. And then after that, I took apart, I don't know if you guys ever remember the little black and white radio televisions that are like 4 inches by 4 inches was the size of the screen. I took that apart.
Oh, yeah. I had one, a little portable TV.
Yeah, it was portable. It had a little handle. Yeah, I fixed one of those because it had some cross wires, and I took it apart and figured it out. And I don't know, I probably was maybe 7 or 8. I don't know. I was pretty young.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's back when I was young, they called what that, like, I would take things apart as well, and they called it being mechanically inclined.
Oh, did
they? I think it was kind of pre some of the technology. But same thing, I would take apart alarm clocks and VCRs and even like VHS tapes and just random things. And
I took apart many VHS tapes. I was fascinated by that. Yeah. I was like, how does it get the movie onto the black tape?
Yeah, it's amazing how that works. And there's so much tape that's spooled up. And and I even took apart like 8-tracks. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've taken apart an 8-track, but
a beta tape.
A beta tape.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But yeah, it's amazing some of that technology, but the real trick was whether I could put these things back together or not.
Yes, that was always the game. Can I get it back together and have it work?
Yeah. So with your portable TV that you took apart, were you able to put it back together?
I did, and it totally worked. And the deal was I got to keep it if I fixed it, and I don't think my dad thought I could fix it.
Wow.
And so he wanted it back once it was fixed. I was like, no, that was not the agreement. So
that's incredible. That's kind of unheard of, because I would have totally messed it up. So how did you figure out how to do that?
Or
that you could do that?
I don't think it wasn't a place where you had to ask permission. You just did. My parents were very, I guess, laissez-faire. Like, we just were running wild Huckleberry Finn style. And I grew up on a ranch in the middle of nowhere. So it was sort of like find our own entertainment. And usually that was in the back of my dad's machine shed that had all the tools you could imagine for the last 150 years, like progressively stacked. The further to the front of the machine shop you got, the newer the technology.
Oh, cool.
So
he was organized.
That was where I played.
Very cool. And so you didn't have those boundaries, basically. Mm-hmm. But I've failed a bunch. We were talking about this a little bit before the show, and how I deal with failure. But it seems like you have this natural knack for a lot of things. Do you run into challenges? How do you get past that? How do you keep in the right mindset to move forward and learn?
I kind of like to relabel. You know, when most people label something, they're, you know, that maybe they label it as failure. I like to label it as like a learning opportunity. Like, there's something here that I didn't quite understand. And so you keep on picking at that till you kind of get it. And I think the other thing is, like, when you sort of feel that inside of yourself, like that little fear or doubt, I know I like to acknowledge it and say, oh, there's something there that is kind of scary. I'm going to run towards it and not away from it. And I think that progressively has helped me in my life. I mean, sometimes that has hindered me to run towards things I'm afraid of, because there's usually a good reason that one is afraid of something. Yeah. But, you know, if you are always looking at something as a learning opportunity, it gives yourself space to make mistakes, to fail, and that it's okay. That way you don't get caught up in the self-esteem stuff and that sort of that weird, dark, downward spiral of like, oh, I'm not good enough, I don't understand, versus like, huh, that was interesting, let's try that again.
That's amazing. I love that. That's really powerful because, yeah, you're making me think about even labeling it failure is not doing me any good. Yeah. So it's a natural process. It's a learning opportunity. I really like that mindset. So you talked a little bit about growing up and your dad had that workshop with all these different tools and technology, and you were able to play in that space and learn and experiment. As you got older, how did you end up getting into business?
My family has always been entrepreneurial. And so my parents encouraged me and my brother and another friend to start our own little company. We would go clean up job sites or plant flowers or, you know, make houses nice. And so I started doing that when I was 16. And it was kind of rough, like that first business, because the year before I had been working for this landscape maintenance company. I think I made $3,000. And then the little company I had with my brother, I think I had maybe $500 at the end of that summer. But I had learned a lot and kind of got the bug, like maybe this is something that I could do. And then it wasn't until later, I think I must have been 22 when I started doing other companies. It was during that the recession, like I think the recession for a lot of people made what the normal path was no longer accessible. And that was the same time, like the iPhone came out, and I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss, like that 4-Hour Work Week book came out that finally talked about business as not just like a brick and mortar store, but as you on your laptop in a cafe in Buenos Aires, that's a possibility. And so I was like, huh, I don't like the idea of having to go up to a shop every day and, you know, punch a card and sell clothing or whatever. If that's somebody's passion, awesome. But I'm like, I want to travel the world and I want to, you know, build websites and I want to come up with new ideas. And so I started doing that.
Very cool. And you're based out of Austin, Texas, is that right?
Yes, I have a place in Austin and a place in Mountain View.
And in Mountain View. Yeah. Awesome. So Tim Ferriss is also, I think, in Austin, is that right?
I think so.
There's an interesting scene that's kind of sprouted up out of there. A lot of innovation coming out of there. What are the kind of the resources that you're seeing there?
You know, Texas is a very interesting place, and Austin is definitely my favorite place within Texas. It's just sort of a get her done. Like people are creators there. And there's a whole support system for creative endeavors. And there's these sort of like these little pods, like Portland, Oregon is another kind of place where there's a lot of creativity, a lot of makers. And Austin's another place. There's a lot of creativity, a lot of makers. It also has a really interesting business environment that makes it a little more friendly for taxes and employment and stuff like that. As an entrepreneur, I think that's what attracts a lot of people to that area. The food's great. There's a big music scene and it's beautiful. The weather's great.
It's amazing. How often are you traveling?
I probably live out of an airport a couple weeks out of the month, I think. I'm consciously choosing now to be like, okay, I'm going to be in a place that I call home for at least a week at a time just to rest, recover, get some other kinds of work done.
Makes sense. And when you're traveling, you have businesses or you have investments in each of these locations. What are you doing on your typical trip?
I do some public speaking or advising. So I could be asked to go talk about blockchain technology and how it'll affect different industries is typically what I'm being asked to do. So I do a lot of that. Or I go talk to some of my startups, see how they're doing and what's happening with their technology and how I can support them. Or I'm listening to new startups tell me about their ideas and seeing how I can help.
Very, very cool. And yeah, it's amazing that you're able to do all of that, because it is taxing to travel that much. But it's one of those things where you're doing well, you're growing technology, you're creating things. So amazing what you're doing. As you were progressing in technology, you talked about your dad Do you have any mentors or people who have kind of helped you along the way that you model, you've modeled anything that you're doing after, or key books that you've read?
Oh, yeah. I think we are all like the products of the people that we surround ourselves by. They say that you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And so I've tried to be thoughtful in that, making sure that I'm surrounded by other people that like to create and grow. And, you know, my favorite books are The Art of Living. It's a very, very old book about stoicism, but it's so fresh. You can get it on Amazon for like a couple dollars. It's a great book, an easy read, but I feel like every time I open up that book, I only can read maybe a page or two, and then I have to like sit and chew on it and put it down. So yeah, I love
those books are great.
I love that book.
Yeah. Kind of, I'm going to meditate on this for the next day or two
yep.
and then read another page.
Ryan Holiday has some really great work around stoicism too. I really like coming back to some of these base concepts that let you sort of like deal with how dynamic our world is. If you have like this base set of like how you deal with difficult situations, like we talked earlier about just labeling, how do you think about thinking? How do you think about experiences? How do you think about like things that are outside of your control? And I really like right now stoicism and how it kind of helps you build a base on how to interact in a world that is often chaotic and out of control.
So it sounds like you're kind of, I don't want to use a too techie or trendy term, but like mind hacking, where you're experiencing the world and your everything that you're doing through a certain filter or certain lens, and you're working on kind of your inner self to or you've done very well working on your inner self to experience that in a way that's empowering. Is that what you're talking about with stoicism?
Yeah, I think in general, like I like that experimentation, not just in like you mentioned lenses. I think that's a great way of looking at it. It's like not everything needs to be looked at under the same lens, but being able to trade them off to give you new perspectives on what you're looking at. But I do like that experimentation. Today I got my first IV bag of vitamins. They had an
IV bag of vitamins?
Yeah. So I've always kind of wanted to try it. It's like you go, I had heard about it in Vegas, like if you drank too much, you could go get an IV bag and they would pump you full of like rehydrate you and give you vitamins. And friend
had
told
that's
me
that's popular there now.
Right. But they had a place here, but it was just for like, if you're always traveling, you're on the road. Some of my other favorite books around developing your mind and your consciousness are Positive Intelligence and The Misleading Mind. They really help you start thinking about thinking and helping you grasp and control your mind so that you could harness it for the things that you want to do and not become overwhelmed or discouraging to yourself. And some of the other things I found really helpful is another book called Six Pillars of Self-Esteem that was written that sort of helps you have the strength to do what you want to do and live the kind of life that you want to live. I know, especially as women, that we can kind of get like beat down and we are often our greatest hindrance in this world. And so if we can control our minds and we can build up our self-esteem, then we can do just about anything we want to do.
That's amazing. And yeah, I'm excited to hear about those books too, because I haven't heard of those and they're not kind of the typical ones going around in my circle. So hopefully they have Audible versions, because that's
yes.
how I read most of my books.
They totally have audio versions, and they're not techie at all, but they help those of us that are techie that want to do big things, do bigger, better things with our lives.
Very awesome. Thanks. So you were talking about kind of optimizing your view and the way that you're experiencing the world and different situations, and that kind of lens or kind of mind hacking. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So when I first sort of like really got into entrepreneurship, I realized like, what are these roadblocks in my life? What are these sort of like these micro irritants that made it difficult for me to, you know, get that website finished or put out that ad campaign or, you know, get a chapter written in a book? And sometimes it's just like being present and being like, you know what, this chair is like really uncomfortable. I need to get a new chair. And so it's like acknowledging sort of those roadblocks. And then when you kind of like progress far enough And you ask earlier, like, how often are you on the road? So I'm like, well, I'm on the road a lot. So then it's like, how do you maintain that kind of productivity in the long term? So it's like, well, I try to never work on the weekends so that I always can decompress and I don't check my email. And it makes people mad, but it's like, I need that for me so that I can stay productive for life and not just burn out. And, you know, I'm always trying to experiment with other things, whether it's like, taking vitamins via an IV bag or trying a new diet or, you know, going to a spa or something like that so that I am always working at peak performance and trying to figure out how do I keep on improving on my performance and mental clarity.
So that's fascinating. You talked about, because you work hard, you do a lot of traveling, you're up to a lot. And how is that sustainable? And you're saying it's important that you actually take your weekends. It's an interesting perspective to take time off or take a break and kind of recharge and refresh and not just be go, go, go all the time past the point of burnout. That doesn't work sustainably. So it's amazing to see you implementing that and using that effectively.
Well, I took basically the time from September when I left Factum to mid-December, just pretty much off. I did a little bit of public speaking and a little bit of writing, but most of that time was just for me and trying to understand, you know, what did I want to do in this next phase of my life? I'm 33 now, and this is sort of hitting the peak of what it's possible, you know, in a person's career cycle, like their 30s is sort of like, this is a time that they make what they're going to make. And so it's like, I wanted to be really thoughtful and conscious in that, especially if I could afford to take the time off.
Amazing. So yeah, just being intentional about everything that you're doing, and sounds like you're planning and strategizing and then creating that future.
Yes.
Is that right?
I think that's important. Otherwise, we just sort of like, we could show up every day and just be a warm body, or we can show up every day with some intention of where we want to go. And if we're patient, we'll start to see that we're going where we want to go.
Cool. Well, what's next for you?
More investing. I think 2018 is going to be crazy, especially in the blockchain space. We're seeing a lot of really interesting developments as governments start regulating and figuring out how they want to handle this new technology. Building out my own company, the DAP3D and the DigiPuppy game. And maybe we'll get that Ethereum for Dummies book written. We'll see.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And the DigiPuppies, of course.
DigiPuppies, for sure.
How do we keep up on that? You gave us the DigiPuppies website earlier, which was digipuppies.com.
Yep.
Do you have a personal website, or how do people contact you on social or follow what you're up to?
Probably the best and easiest way to grab my attention is going to be on Twitter. And my handle is @LawrenceTiana.
@LawrenceTiana on Twitter. Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And thank you at home for listening, and have a great day.
Thanks.
UpGuard, one of my favorite companies in Mountain View, combines asset discovery, security ratings, and vendor questionnaires for the only complete cyber risk solution. Not only do they keep us safe online, they empower women in tech internally. They focus on hiring female engineers to make sure that we rise to the top. So I welcome you to take a look at their job opportunities from Mountain View to New York, New York to Sydney, Australia. They are a company worth exploring. Their mentorship culture is magnetic. Mention the Women in Tech podcast when you apply. Just as they celebrate women in tech, we want to celebrate you too. So make sure to let us know when you've reached out to UpGuard, and we'll make sure to feature you on the Women in Tech social channels. We believe in you. UpGuard.com. Visit them for yourself. You'll see exactly what I mean. The Women in Tech podcast is an independent production funded by you, the community. To support Women in Tech, if you believe in the vision as much as we do, please consider going to womenintechpodcast.com. That's womenintechpodcast.com, and just click on the contribution link to keep this podcast going. Thank you.
To join in the conversation and chat with me and other crypto enthusiasts, check out the crypto channel on the We Are LA Tech private Slack at wearelatech.com/VIP.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not the opinions of We Are LA Tech or their participants and are subject to change. The content of this show, the videos, website, and all related works are provided for entertainment purposes only. It is not intended to be, nor does it constitute, financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to investing, finances, trading, or anything else based on this content without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to buy, sell, or trade any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent financial advisor.